League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? And hey, happy holidays. Hope your Christmas was fantastic. And this week, as a special treat, Jeremy will be out enjoying some vacation time. So my man, my boy PC, Patrick Creighton, and I are going to have you for 4 days, Monday through Thursday. We're blessed to have the bearded wonder himself, Tyler Scott, on a marathon with us, as always, to trudge through 3 hours. But I'm excited for the fact that the Bees will have some fun. Let me just tell you this, boys. I'm just happy to be back.
Man, it's good to have you back, Joe. I mean, I know that when I'm gone for a couple of days, I start climbing the walls, I start getting antsy. It's like, all right, I need the microphone. I need to get back in studio. How long did it take you before you started climbing the walls? Like, I need to go back to work.
Yeah, it was pretty much within the first day and a half, because I'm sitting there going, I'm going to have a whole bunch of downtime. What am I going to do with myself? But with the kids out of school and Lisa working, yeah, I was like looking at the clock going, oh my God, where'd the day go? And can I go back to work tomorrow? It was brutal.
Well, certainly hope all of you enjoyed your Christmas and enjoyed some time with your family. Those of you with children, as I and Joel do, I hope Santa Claus was good to your kids. And Santa sometimes is very good, and then you spend the next 3 days getting rid of a whole bunch of old stuff to make room for the new stuff. How many bags have you had to move out to make room for the new stuff, Joel?
I left it to Lisa, but she did an outstanding job in, like, short work, making just hefty bag after hefty bag, just load up the car, go to Goodwill. We gave it to friends, like a lot of the baby stuff, kid stuff, she had loaded up. So loyal listeners of ours that had people, that coworkers that were like just having twins or whatever, we were able to donate a bunch of stuff to take care of some people during the holidays. So we love that. But yeah, I mean, I leave that part of it to her, but thankfully there was a ton that I got to move out.
Okay, so yeah, you and I, exact same boat. There are 12 bags on my front door today for big brothers and big sisters to come pick up. And that's the stuff that was in good enough shape to donate.
Right.
Then there's the other stuff that put about 6 bags on the curb today and the garbage. So yeah, Santa brought a lot of stuff, and it was one of those, all right, we're getting rid of everything. And yeah, sometimes that purge feels really good.
I agree with you.
Things that feel really good. How about when you're a 13-point dog, and not only do you win, but you stomp a mud hole and walk it dry? Who were the Texans on Sunday? Funny thing from last week, Jeremy and I talking about how the Texans were going to have this totally makeshift offensive line due to injuries, due to COVID. They're starting all guys, people, like, no idea who these guys are. And I said to them, I said, watch, they'll have their best rushing game of the season. You know, kind of facetiously. Yet here we are, best rushing game of the season. Once again, the pocket was clean. And Davis Mills delivering strikes.
To me, that was the biggest thing. I mean, there were two takeaways. One, when you look at it, and Rex Burkhead becomes the season-long rushing leader after tallying 149 in the game. But more so than that, you think to yourself, well, who was it? Well, it was Mark Ingram, until Mark Ingram was traded, and then no one sniffed any sense of a running game. And suddenly, with a 149 and 2 touchdowns, he's the leading rusher on the season for this team. And like you said, and I'm going, how the hell is that possible? One, that they suddenly focused on running the football. Two, that they were actually able to run the football. Three, that they had a makeshift offensive line, which they've had all season long anyway. But the moving pieces previously were high draft picks and guys that you spent a lot trading for. This time, you just shuffled the deck, went to all these different guys, and were more effective against a potential playoff team than you had been all season long. And on top of that, the one thing that I finally am able to say that at least I have some saving grace with is Davis Mills looks like he can play in the NFL. And he, and look, I'm not saying he's a franchise quarterback, but he looks like a guy that's going to continue to develop. And maybe that Stanford education, he picks up on things. He observes when he's out, and he gets better when he goes back in. And he got better again yesterday.
Davis Mills, and it really kind of started 3 games ago, right? It starts with the Seattle game, where Davis Mills starts to show you he can string some completions together. He's got a little more arm maybe than you thought. He put a little more zip on the ball the last couple of weeks than maybe you thought you've seen. He's been more accurate. He's been accurate down the field. He's shown some leadership. You know, I thought before the season that a good future comp for Davis Mills was Andy Dalton. You know, when Andy Dalton first came out of TCU playing in Cincinnati, he was a good quarterback. He wasn't a great quarterback, but he was a very good quarterback who was fairly accurate, who was able to get the ball down the field, threw for a lot of yards, touchdowns, kind of led the resurgence there in Cincinnati, even though they didn't get any playoff wins. They were going to the playoffs. They had winning records. These are things the Bengals did not have for years before that. But a guy who could be accurate and could throw the ball. Maybe Davis Mills has a little more zip on the ball when he needs it than Andy Dalton could put on. Mm-hmm. Maybe Davis Mills has a little bit more mobility than Andy Dalton had as a young quarterback. We see Davis Mills with the ability to roll out, the ability to duck under pressure when he needs to. He's not a sitting duck back there as so many other quarterbacks have been that we've seen. And maybe even earlier in the season when he didn't necessarily know what to do when the pass rush came. I think the biggest thing is we have seen through the season, we have seen Davis Mills get better each successive week, even though the pieces around him are not necessarily getting better. And I think that is a big testament to his development.
Yeah, I do too. I think that, Pat, the one thing that you can say about that from the flip side of that then, and I hate to bring up the negatives because I'm the one guy in the show that I'm affiliated with that believed that Davis Mills, the book wasn't closed. There was no ceiling yet. And I'm not saying he was going to be the franchise quarterback, but I wasn't ready to say he wasn't an NFL quarterback. The one thing I still don't like, but he got away with yesterday, was he stares down receivers a lot. He when he goes through his progressions and the route trees and the things that he needs to do, sometimes the decision-making has to come quicker. But that's going to come with more reps and more time as he's continuing to get. But overall, that's just nitpicky. The way he didn't have any picks. He didn't turn the ball over. He protected the ball. You know what? He played smart. And we say this over and over again about the fact that a lot of people think that it's a negative term to be a game manager because Brad Johnson did it, because Trent Dilfer did it, and they won Super Bowls. They were at the top of the pie chart. But other than that, there's a lot of people that just game manager, that's not good enough for a franchise to have as a quarterback. Look, he might be a game manager. He might be Andy Dalton, and that's the high end if you say that, but he was a franchise quarterback for a few years. He had some good years. But even if he's that, it doesn't mean that you stop looking for your franchise quarterback. It doesn't mean that if there's the opportunity to get a franchise quarterback in the draft or one that you think may develop into it, you do this because we've seen the Patriots way, as much as that's a taboo with people here when they compare the Texans and Patriots South and all the personnel and other things that have come from New England. But you know what they did with Jimmy Garoppolo? You know what they did with several of their backups, a lot of which came through the revolving door here for years with Mallett and others, is they developed value so that they could trade them or get something out of them no matter what in the process. And competition is what we need to see from the Texans right now at every position group. It's not a bad thing to have competition at the quarterback position and know that one guy that you drafted in the third round, you may have gotten right to be a guy that can compete.
It's funny you mention game manager because it does have a very negative connotation to it. And I think that's because the general public considers game manager to be a guy who, well, he won't lose you the game, and he'll be fine if you protect him and you give him a running game and he doesn't have to make big plays. And in the postseason, when you need to make a big play, he can't do it. Alex Smith is the ultimate game manager, right? He was, you know, pretty good quarterback all through the regular season, but in the postseason, when you needed him to make a couple of big throws, they just weren't there. But you don't have to, like, you could be a game manager who does make the big play. Not something that I would necessarily 100% agree with, but something that I've heard in the past. Was Eli Manning a game manager who had big plays within him? Was he not a guy who, you know, for 3.5 quarters, Eli Manning could be very pedestrian, but in the fourth quarter, when everything went insane, Eli was at his best, made the big time throws, and cemented his legacy and maybe built a Hall of Fame career on being a guy who for 6 years in the fourth quarter was the absolute best or among the best in football, but all the other times he was maybe a little better than average.
Let me back that up for you, Pat, with some other information or just this is my way of looking at it. Can you name me a big player plays associated with Brad Johnson, Trent Dilfer, Alex Smith? No. But for Eli Manning, besides the helmet catch, you can talk about the pass on the sidelines to, was it Burris?
In the
Super Bowl?
Mario Manningham on the sideline.
On the sideline.
From like his
thrown.
Own goal line. Yeah. He nails him. That was a brilliant throw.
So the minute that you can start naming plays that are signature moments in a guy's career, I think that elevates them to the, whether you say it's the ultimate game manager or it elevates them above game manager because, like you said, in the biggest moments when everything was on the line, he came through for his football team.
You know, how do we look at Joe Flacco? Because to Joe Flacco was a guy who did two things. He could throw it short or he could throw bombs. And he was really good at throwing bombs. And there was one year where every bomb he threw got caught. And they ultimately rode it to a Super Bowl win. And he was never that guy again. He was never going to be that guy again. I don't believe
he got paid like that guy.
Oh, hell yeah, he did. I don't believe you can be consistently that high of a success rate throwing the ball 50 yards in the air all the time. It's just not as high completion. And they caught everything between Jacoby Jones, who made a lifetime here of dropping passes, Anquan Boldin, who had a catch radius the size of an 18-wheeler, Todd Heap, who caught everything under the sun and then ran you over. They had a magical year, and he got paid like a guy who had a magical year, but it was never him again. You know, how many guys fit that mold of where they're, you know, kind of said like Brad Johnson. Is there a Brad Johnson play that we remember? I mean,
no.
Do we remember him more as a member of what is now the Washington football team or, you know, winning a Super Bowl title?
Tampa, yeah. I mean, and that was because of their defense. So, again, it's how you rate a game manager, but I don't think that it's necessarily a negative term. And I think that in the case of Manning, and maybe there might be a few others that were missing, when the time was right, the moment was there, they didn't shy away from it. They made a big play or two that actually elevated that reputation higher. That's why Manning's in consideration for the Hall of Fame.
And look, you win two Super Bowls and come out with two Super Bowl MVPs.
Yep.
It's really hard to say we're not going to put that guy in the Hall of Fame because he's shone brightest on the biggest stage. And that's kind of why, even though he didn't win the MVPs, for Jim Plunkett to have not gotten in the Hall of Fame for so long, for Tom Flores to have not gotten in the Hall of Fame for so long, was always considered an injustice. Here are guys who, you know, won multiple Super Bowls and would not get the same respect as every other player that had gone on to do it, and every other coach that had gone on to do it. Davis Mills gave us a tremendous game on Sunday, looked every bit the part of a guy who should be QB1 at least next season to continue and develop. But the underlying tone is, what has helped Davis Mills be successful? Well, the pockets have been clean. How clean? Tell you about how good this offensive line has been the last three games next.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Joel,
yeah.
How overrated a band is Pearl Jam to you?
Ooh, I don't know. I can't use the term overrated.
Where in the
they
grunge
have a cult
hierarchy?
Following. Like, I put, honestly, I put them above Nirvana. A lot of people love Nirvana. Ooh. And Tyler's the music aficionado in a lot of this. But I think that Pearl Jam, though I know that there's a cult following that maybe gets a little excessive, and they're both Seattle bands. But I prefer Pearl Jam more than I prefer Nirvana.
All right, I was always a Nirvana guy. All right, let's go to Tyler, because Tyler, our resident DJ. Tyler, Nirvana or Pearl Jam?
Not really a fan of Nirvana.
Really?
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Man, I was a huge Nirvana fan. Alice in Chains or Pearl Jam?
Alice in Chains.
All right, that was an easy one. Soundgarden or Pearl Jam?
Soundgarden.
Hell yes. Okay, now we're rolling. Now we're rolling.
Joel, you just did a pregnant pause.
Yeah,
and
well, I got excited, and then I just had a stop for a second. I had a moment.
You had a mental orgasm.
I was reminiscing of times gone by.
My goodness,
back when I worked in rock radio, and I would just go see shows all the time.
Oh, before I was married, Lisa hates concerts. I never missed a concert. I loved concerts. Concerts and movies, not my wife's thing. Crazy, because I would see every movie. I would go to every concert, whether it be the Woodlands or at our place, at Toyota Center, wherever the small venues. I was going to every musical venue that I could to see concerts, and then I got married.
See, I was, especially working in rock radio, I'd be at three shows a week. And like you, I'd go to the movies all the time. Now, and really for the last several years, when I want to go to a movie, I take my son. Okay. My son is my movie buddy, which I'm going to lose in about 8 months. But my son is my movie buddy. And, yeah, when he goes away to college next year, I'm probably not going to see a whole lot of movies because the young lady in the house, my daughter, she is, if it's not animated or something Harry Potter themed, she is not interested.
Me either, to be honest. So I'll pass on Harry Potter and Star Wars.
No, that's what she wants. She wants Harry Potter.
Oh, I'll pass on all
or
that.
She wants nope. Animated. There's not a whole lot of movies that she wants to go see. But like last night, my son and I went to go see The Kingsman. Which was pretty good.
I heard it's pretty good.
Kingsman was pretty good. He had gone to see Spider-Man the night before with his friends. So we didn't go see Spidey. We went to go see The Kingsman. I'll have to take him to go see Spidey again next week. Because he's like, I want to see it again, just not yet.
Okay.
And I was like, all right, well, good. Because I don't want you to see it on back-to-back days. That kind of stinks.
Okay.
But Texans offensive line, five guys. I don't even know how many I could name. I don't even know if it matters.
I think what it does matter when you look at the big picture is that whether it's James Campen, when he doesn't have to worry about management saying you have to make this guy play and you have to make him good and you have to, you know, utilize him wherever there's a hole or a need. We've talked about it in the past ad nauseum about how they just like to play musical positions on the offensive line, and that doesn't build continuity and that doesn't build chemistry amongst the offensive line. But I've known James Campen as a player and I've seen what he's done as a coach, and I believe he can coach. But I believe that when you take some of the politics out of it from the front office and allow them to just do their jobs, that they have a more competent coaching staff than they've had in the past, and maybe that showed a little bit.
Well, I'll tell you what. The offensive line last night, yesterday afternoon, one sack, two quarterback hits, three tackles for loss. That's probably the best game they've put up all year. And in the last three games, for Davis Mills, four total sacks, 10 total quarterback hits, 12 tackles for loss. To put that in perspective, against Indianapolis in that 31-0 debacle, they allowed four sacks and 11 quarterback hits. So essentially they had, in the last 3 weeks, they've gotten better numbers than they did in just that one game against Indy. And when we look back at it bigger picture and say, okay, well, that was just one game. But what does it look like all season long? Well, all season long prior to the last 3 weeks, they'd allowed 35 sacks in 12 games. That's three games. They allowed 80 quarterback hits. That's almost seven quarterback hits per game. They'd allowed 55 tackles for loss. That's almost five TFL per game. And here we had literally, hey, walk in off the practice squad and get in there and play. We know that, you know, we don't even know how to pronounce your name or who you are. It doesn't even matter. Just get in there and play. Five nondescript guys got in there and gave them the best. And I know Joey Bosa didn't play.
Right.
But they still gave.
But that's still a team on the cusp of a playoff berth that's fighting for their lives.
Yeah, they are, even though they might be the most Jekyll and Hyde team in the NFL. But that's a good team that they put up their best offensive line performance with five guys that haven't played together this year.
So at least when you're looking at the light at the end of the tunnel or the sunshine and rainbows instead of the rain clouds and the devastation from a Texans fan perspective, I believe that when we've talked about Lovie Smith, he deserves the chance to come back with real talent next year to show that he might even be able to do more. I believe that when we talked about like Pep Hamilton having a place on this coaching staff next year, whether it's quarterback coach, they let him try offensive coordinator and they elevate him, regardless with what he's had to work with and because of his reputation, there's a guy you want to keep on the staff. We know that Tim Kelly, for all intents and purposes, is gone. So you look at it, you go, James Campen's a guy that can coach in this league, that's proven he can coach in this league. He deserves to come back because what he's been able to do, and by the way, that wasn't a young running back or a still spry Philip Lindsay that was running the football yesterday. That was the over-the-hill running back that got you 149 thanks to that offensive line. So, therefore, there's another coach that deserves to be back. You understand there's going to be some retooling, but you also understand that, hey, in certain areas, they might have gotten it right with the coaching staff they put together.
And listen, this is a different game than the Titans game, right? Because against the Titans, they didn't even have 200 yards of offense. They really only won that game because Ryan Tannehill could not stop giving them the football. This was a different contest. They outgained the Chargers. They had more yards, and they had the three turnovers. But they outgained, you know, one of the better offensive teams, a team with an up-and-coming star young quarterback. Yeah, nobody looks and says, oh, well, you know, Justin Herbert, he's okay. He needs to develop a lot more. He's already considered a star in this league. And they outgained the L.A. Chargers, which, granted, not by a lot, but they outgained. They had 437 yards of offense. That's a big deal for a Texans team that's been shut out twice and often has looked completely inept on offense. They put up 437 against a team that's fighting for a playoff spot and needed the game.
And here's the thing. Miss me on all of this, Davis Mills, best rookie quarterback in the league. Miss me on these comparisons to Mac Jones or even the people that got so far. And this is the thing when you drink this blue Kool-Aid and as a Texans fan. You win week one and suddenly we're all idiots for saying that they're going to have an awful season and there's a chance this team's a playoff team. You win against the Titans, and people believe, holy cow, they're building something, at least for 1 week. You win against the Chargers yesterday, and now everybody is convinced, hey, they're ahead of the curve. No, they're not. But they're getting some wins that give you hope that the people that they have in place are able to do some things that you weren't sure a week or two ago that they could. And the jury's still out on your head coach. And there's still evaluations to be done on your general manager. But it seems like he's getting more right now than people thought about at the time. But miss me on the comparisons to Justin Herbert, because he's already proven that he's a franchise quarterback. Now, he does still have those days that every time he's on the cusp of being elevated to a status that he hasn't gotten to yet in terms of elite quarterbacks in the league, but he's definitely their franchise quarterback. But franchise quarterbacks have bad days too. Just like Davis Mills is starting to progress, and he's getting better. He's not a franchise quarterback yet, but I believe that those, and I believe Jeremy might even admit this finally, because he was the one that said, no, he doesn't even deserve to be on a roster next year. He's not that guy. Well, as much as I kept saying, hey, there is no ceiling on this kid yet, and we don't know what he could be, at least we know now he has enough on tape where we can say he has the potential to be on a roster next year, and maybe if he keeps progressing, he can fight to be the starter next year.
Who knew if he actually got to stand up and have time to make throws, he could make them. You know, it's really hard to, and it's also not fair to judge a young quarterback, particularly a rookie quarterback, who's playing behind a garbage offensive line and running for his life on every play that he's not getting killed. And they have absolutely no running game whatsoever, dead last in the league in rushing, to support him, to look at that guy and go, oh man, that guy stinks. He can't play. look at the struggles that Trevor Lawrence has had. Look at the struggles that Zach Wilson has had. We'll look at this more later on because those two guys actually played each other this week. But that is what you expect when you have a true rookie quarterback on a rebuilding team. Mm-hmm. That's what you get. They struggle like hell because they don't have the support. And yesterday, where you had a whole different offensive line, there's a running game. They're blocking for the run. Rex Burkhead, 31 years old, getting off for 140-plus yards. No Brandon Cooks because he's got the Rona. Seven different receivers caught passes from Davis Mills, and they moved the football. They converted on third downs.
This is what I was talking about with Jeremy over and over again. The signs were there. Not necessarily he was a franchise, but the signs were there that he could play. He would lead them on drives. He was doing things that no matter how much you thought Taylor was the short-term bridge gap quarterback, that Taylor wasn't doing. When he got into games, whether it was crunch time or just cleanup time, there were times when he was thrown into duty that he could lead them on a drive that led to points. So that was a progression. Then he sat out for a while. When he came back, a lot of the mistakes he was making earlier, he wasn't as prone to making. And he was improving, yet, and he was still taking them on drives and getting points. And you even think about from the Seattle game, opening drive, boom, 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 matriculating down the field, scores right off the first drive. And you're going, okay, I'm seeing some things. That's why I said hold out hope. You can go to Troy Aikman's rookie year when he was 1-15.
He didn't even get that win. Steve Walsh did.
It was awful, but yet he turned out to be a Hall of Fame quarterback. And again, I'm not trying to tell you that Davis Mills is a Hall of Famer franchise quarterback, but what I am trying to tell you is that if this guy continues to progress and give the ample opportunities, whether it's the snaps in practice or the starts that he needs to get under his belt where he sees true NFL defenses, he has the skill set right now that says he will be on a roster, should be for this team next year competing for a starting job, but that he should be, if he continues to progress like this, an NFL quarterback for quite some time, whether it be carrying a clipboard or carrying a team to the playoffs.
Considering the overall roster and makeup of this team and what it will ultimately look like again next year, barring some kind of horrific regression, I think right now Davis Mills is the leader of the clubhouse to be the starting quarterback on this team next year as you continue to try to put more young talent back into the roster and what we know is going to be a several-year rebuild.
Let me emphasize this. What do you have to lose? Next year, you're still supposed to lose more than you win to keep this thing going in the right direction on the rebuild. So it's okay if Davis Mills is your starter next year. Win or lose.
Can we say trust the process?
No, we can say embrace the suck.
Trust the process with the Texans. It's hard. Hard to trust the Texans, but Davis Mills is showing you maybe they did see something. Maybe they did have something right when they made that draft selection. Coming up next, three more bowl games died. Are we getting closer to CFP Armageddon? Next.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Just get back on the Killer Bees! PC doing some research and development, so I'm developing the fact that I used to do this for a living instead of sitting in the two-chair. We're back. Jeremy's out this week, so is Brendan, so I hope they enjoy some time off. My good friend Patrick Creighton sitting to my right, and myself, along with Tyler Scott, who's overworked, and, well, we'll leave it there. But he's with us in spirit and other ways. So we're here to carry you through the week before we say goodbye to 2021. And what better way to start the week than to see a Texans victory, a victory that was completely unexpected, a victory that I almost got mad at when I saw the score and how it continued to develop in a positive frame of mind because I'm going, look, I've said this all along, follow the script. Be in it for 3.5 quarters. But in the fourth quarter, and there were ample opportunities for the Chargers to make a delirious comeback late in this game, but yet the turnovers kept happening from Herbert. And instead, the lead got bigger instead of smaller. But I was like, look, I was telling Lisa, for three quarters, I'm good with this team playing great. running the hell out of the football. Davis Mills showing all kinds of progress. Nico Collins catching touchdowns. But dang it, stop winning the games. You need the highest picks possible. That's why I embraced the suck all year.
The Lions tried really hard to win this week.
Yeah, they did.
But they just came up a little bit short. They really want to get out of that one spot. They want the number two pick. Jacksonville's not even trying. Texans now 4-11, tied with both Jersey A and Jersey B, as it's written on the schedule. That would be the New York Football Giants and the New York Football Jets. But all three of those teams, four-win teams, and then you get into the Seahawks and the Panthers, who are five winners. But both New York teams and the Texans, 4-11, all jockeying for who wants to be three and who wants to be five.
And I'm telling you, it means something if you're the Texans to want to stay get to three and stay there. And thankfully, the Jets have one of the tiebreakers. But when you look at it and go, you need to get better as quick as possible. And I get that there's something to be said about feel-good moral victories like yesterday. But you had that against Tennessee. And I guess this is one that gives people a little bit more hope because you saw something from Davis Mills. You saw something from what was able to happen with the offensive line. But at the end of the day, it's still more important to take these L's so that you can get more W's down the road, rebuilding quicker and sooner rather than later, in my opinion.
Now, if you, and it sounds like you do, you subscribe to the get the highest draft pick possible, trade down, mm-hmm. get as many picks as you can. This is where the discussion in how big is the difference between 1 and 3, 3 and 5 really matters. Because if you are in a draft where there's no elite quarterback to grab at 1, maybe the difference between picking number 2 and picking number 5 isn't all that great. You're talking about linemen or, you know, offensive or defensive linemen. But there's no, quote, elite quarterback that's going to absolutely change your franchise. And maybe the difference between those two players isn't that great. When you look at trading the pick, though, that's where the difference becomes much, much greater. Everybody knows that there is this like draft pick valuation chart, started with Jimmy Johnson, was later updated by Bill Belichick, that assigns a point value to every draft pick. So when teams are deciding, all right, I'm going to trade this pick down, how much am I going to get back? You know, why does the number one overall pick get 3 firsts plus, and then the number 4 overall pick might get 2 firsts, and that's about it? Well, on this chart, which basically every team uses, this is the Belichick upgrade version of the chart. The number one pick is worth 3,000 points. The number 3 pick is worth 2,200. The number 5 pick is worth 1,700, and it continues to go down from there. And it goes down pretty quickly. So the value, what you can get if you have the number 1 overall pick, you get more picks right than if you are number 5. So that is where the difference lies in the value of the pick, is if you're looking at a trade-down scenario, and I would hope they are, because after not having early-round picks now for several years, this is a team that is destitute of young talent. You need all the young talent you can get, more picks, more opportunities. Finishing, getting the 3 pick, getting the 5 pick, probably costs you between 2 and 5 draft picks in compensation.
You're also at the mercy, then, of the teams that need to move up. If there are teams that desperately, if it's a defensive line heavy top half of the first round, you're at the mercy of teams that need to move up, because that is the one position group that they have to upgrade, that they're looking to try and get more value out of that pick. And the misconception that has to be blown out of the water yet again for Texans fans, because I already see it, and we see some of the responses we've gotten again today. Well, there's no franchise quarterback, but the number one pick is only essential when you need the franchise quarterback. No, not true. And look, we saw it. Even in a quarterback-laden draft like last year, there were 5 first-round picks that were quarterbacks that were spread out throughout the first round, but there was plenty of jockeying for position by teams after that number one pick to get one of the other guys. But it isn't about a franchise quarterback. And whether you believe in Davis Mills or not, or competition or not, or other thing, it's about, like you said, restocking the cupboard, getting as many young players that build up position groups that allow this team to have a better roster than what Nick Caserio has had to deal with and what he's tried to construct on a short-term basis just to get over salary cap hell and get them through a year or two where they're trying to do exactly what they're not doing now, which is to suck as much as possible to get as many assets as possible. And as we said all along on this show in the last couple of weeks, it's not to get a franchise quarterback. Maybe if the one falls into your lap with multiple picks and after you trade Watson and all the picks and assets you acquire, if there's one that's right at the right time, you take him. But you're trying to get the best possible players at every single position group. If the first two picks are defensive edge rushers, then don't take an edge rusher. Take a corner. Take an offensive lineman. Take guys that are going to strengthen other position groups so that you continue to fortify your roster. That's what it's about. That's why I keep saying how important it is to move up as high as possible to get as many picks in the top half of each round.
And if you just look back at the last draft, right, the three quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3. But Ja'Marr Chase goes 5. He's having a huge year in Cincinnati. Jalen Waddle goes 6. When he's on the field, he and Tua have had a great connection. Penei Sewell went 7 to Detroit, and he has helped their offensive line immensely. Devontae Smith has been terrific in Philly. He went 10th. Micah Parsons is wrecking offenses in Dallas, and he went 12th. So you start going down the line. So first linebacker taken. You see a first offensive tackle taken. You can see where guys are making big impacts further down the line. Like Najee Harris has made an impact here late for the Steelers. Running back taken late in the draft. At 24, late in the first round. So there are plenty of places. Look at the first round. I know people say, oh, it's a crapshoot, it's 50-50, and I think a lot of that is based on projections. People drafting, projecting a position of need, etc., over taking a guy who really is just the best talent. There's a lot of talent in the first round. It's kind of hard to not get a good player in the first round. So go get 3 of them.
You're right. But here's the other thing that we got to take in consideration. We can roll this over, but the conversation has to also be where there might be some trepidation and some fear from Texans fans, and that is Nick Caserio's running this draft. Nick Caserio, because all the guys that you mentioned and where they fell in the first round, they were taken with savvy personnel departments that knew they were getting the player that they were getting and had a pretty good inkling that that player was going to turn out. You have a first-time general manager where there's still question marks all over the place about him being in a draft where he has all of his picks capable of getting those players at those positions to fill those needs, but you're hopeful. But that's why I can understand there might be some fear, and that's why I understand that if it's not a slam dunk number one overall with a quarterback waiting in the wings, that it makes Texans fans worry a little bit.
Maybe some of those fears should be a little bit assuaged. We'll get into it next.
Yeah. All right, before we get to that, I want to tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Look, I go there every week. I love Dr. O and his staff. I trust everything that they do because of the fact that they know what they're doing. They've been at those other places and there's other clinics. They know what works, what doesn't. They got rid of the stuff that doesn't when they started their own business, and they just get you the results that you need. Whether it's a workout program that starts with a full body composition analysis, or you want to get involved in hormone therapy, and men and women, they have services for both you, the men and the women, and it works from a multitude of different ways. You can do it by going to the clinic weekly. You can do it at home, and they can teach you how. Or for men, there's cutting-edge pellet testosterone therapy where you only have to go once every 6 months, but you still reap all the benefits, get all the energy, and feel better about yourself on a daily basis. You want to recover quicker? There's HGH peptide therapy, and they've got everything under one roof, from all the powders for your smoothies and the proteins and the fat burners to all the vitamins that you may need. They take care of their customers every step of the way. Start the process today. Go to ApolloMH.com. Sign up for your first appointment. When you do, you're going to find out most major insurance is accepted, discounts for military personnel and first responders. And then go and show up and be honest when they ask you the tough questions. They're going to find you answers. They're going to get your results. They've done it for me. They could do it for you, too. And many listeners that have signed up along the way. Check them out today. It's the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
ESPN 97.5. Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the killer bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Patch Creighton in for Jeremy Branham alongside Joel Blank, Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5. Before we get back into the discussion. We will get to the phones. Ben, you're on the Killer Bees. What's going on, Ben?
It was good, guys. Hey, two questions, or one question, really. You guys are, I feel like you guys are making it sound like trading back would be really easy to do. Most of the times, from what I remember at least, you guys are the experts here. When teams trade up, they normally trade up for a quarterback. So who would actually want to trade with the Texans, give up all their assets for a player that's not a quarterback? Are there actually any player in this draft that can change the team besides Aiden Hutchinson?
Miami traded up for a receiver just last draft.
Yeah.
You know, Philadelphia
did too.
Yeah, Philadelphia as well. I mean, teams are still willing to move for non-quarterback positional players if they feel like, and again, this is where we go to previous discussions that I've had with Jeremy, where I said, look, if this is the Texans or this is a team that you're at the mercy, again, no matter what, when trying to trade back, of teams having a demand for your pick. But there are a lot of teams that are on the cusp of taking the next step, the next progression, getting to the playoffs or becoming a contender, and have a glaring hole at one position group. The Texans have so many glaring holes, it's blinding. So the fact that you get teams that need a defensive end, get teams like last year, and Pat mentioned how many different receivers went in the first round, because there were so many teams that were one wide receiver one away from being a contending team in their mind or a playoff team for several years to come. So it's not just about the quarterback when we talk about trading down, but it is about being at the mercy of other teams. Because you can have an ideal pick that you feel has the value, like Pat was saying with the point system, of jarring interest in other squads. But those teams have to be in such a desperate mode of, we've got to have this player at that position, that they are going to want to make you an offer you can't refuse, as opposed to you having to go drum up conversations with other teams, because that's going to be a tougher tree to climb.
Let's also look at it from this point of view, right? Just because there is no consensus number one quarterback to go number one overall doesn't mean that, you know, the scouting reports on Kenny Pickett and Matt Corral mm-hmm. don't say these are really, really good quarterback prospects that both could be impact players their rookie seasons. Just because they're not expected to go number one doesn't mean that they won't wind up going number three or number five. And, you know, if you look at where the draft sits now, right, the Giants would pick five. Are the Giants looking at a quarterback? Carolina would pick seven. Carolina maybe should definitely be looking at a quarterback. Does Carolina decide we got to get ahead of the Giants in order to get the quarterback we want? Let's call the Houston Texans. Because if I'm picking at three or four, it's going to cost me less than if I had to go to one. So now mm-hmm. I can get the quarterback I want, but I only give up, say, two firsts instead of three firsts, a second, and a third. So where they are, because they'll be a little bit lower, could wind up being a boon for them in this draft, because they'll have more people interested in trading because of the lesser cost to acquire the pick. From the Texans' point of view, what Joel and I were talking about before is if you're at one, well, now you're talking about three number ones plus. And at three, four, or five, you're not. But at three, four, or five, that price point is more palatable to a lot of teams mm-hmm. who are looking to make a deal, especially if the target now is the quarterback.
Here's the other thing, too. The more entertaining game for Texans fans, because, again, a lot of times they lose sight. They're still focused on the draft, and they lose sight in the fact that the Watson trade should be like trading the number one overall pick. If, and it's a big if, but if the off-the-field stuff takes care of itself, the haul you're supposed to get back from him would be the equivalent of having the number one overall pick with a franchise quarterback available, because we've heard anything from three first rounds and two other players to your formula that you're talking about, to some teams even trying to up the ante, and competition will up that ante if you get more than one team interested. The more entertaining game for Texans fans should be, aside from trying to have the highest pick possible in every single round by finishing with the worst record you can possibly have, is what teams are going to be interested in Deshaun Watson. Because it looks like the Giants should be interested, and I said this weeks ago, but the Giants should be interested in Deshaun Watson. There's rumors they're interested in Russell Wilson, but if they were smart, they should be interested in Deshaun Watson. Seattle should be interested in Deshaun Watson, because if they move on from Russell Wilson, they're not moving on from the rest of the team in a complete rebuild. They have Metcalf. They have other guys on their roster that are worth building around and keeping around. Cleveland with as bad as Baker Mayfield has been, but with the rest of the roster Super Bowl ready, and I was on this one a while back too, in saying, look, Cleveland's a team to keep an eye on. You may not get from them the highest picks that you could really that you're actually looking to acquire. But Cleveland and a third team, or in some way you can get creative, Cleveland is in desperate need of the one thing they don't have. This is what I'm talking about, teams and their specific position groups that they have to target because they have everything else. And it means taking the next step. Well, Cleveland's got to take the next step. It's not going to be with Baker Mayfield. And whether it's Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, or Deshaun Watson, that's a team that's going to be interested, I believe, in Deshaun Watson.
Now, look, for Watson, obviously, it's got to get through the legal stuff.
Yep.
And he's got to open up to more than just the Miami Dolphins, which so far he has not been willing to do. But then there's this other part of the equation that I think gets swept under or looked over. Deshaun Watson was being looked at as, oh, you're going to get every pick in the world, because Deshaun Watson made $10 million this year.
Mm-hmm.
Next year, Deshaun Watson makes $35 million. And when we hit March, so 3 months from now, his 2023, $37 million guarantees. So you're talking about 2 years, $72 million for Deshaun Watson, not knowing his legal status, not knowing whatever is going to happen with him and Roger Goodell and Lisa Friel, because remember, Ezekiel Elliott got six games and, well, he didn't do it.
Right.
So who knows what we're looking at in an absolutely unprecedented situation with Deshaun Watson. Whoever is trading for him, even if you can get through the legal stuff, you still have to deal with it's $72 million guaranteed over the next 2 years, and he is going to get suspended. We don't know how long.
I've been preaching how long. He's going to get six no matter what because
Minimum.
Of Zeke. Because
Minimum.
Of Zeke. There's no doubt about it. And then you got to hope that Rusty does everything that he possibly can to get as many of these cases off the books and then get through the others that they have to actually see through to some point, to where there's some kind of finality to them, and hope it's all resolved, ideally for the Texans, before the draft.
I mean, because there's no precedent for this with 24 accusers, we don't know if Lisa Friel's going to say 6 games, 10 games, a year, indefinite suspension, you can apply for reinstatement in a year. She wanted to make a statement with Ezekiel Elliott's suspension. She wanted to make an example out of it. You don't think Lisa Friel wants to make an example out of Deshaun Watson? Well, I have no idea what the league is going to do, but to just think, oh, he'll get 6 games and move on, I think that's kind of foolish.
Well,
because the NFL has shown they have no problem taking the biggest possible hammer every time they can.
Well, the other thing that they've shown is that they don't have any consistency with past precedents and following a consistent pattern, like most leagues and most commissioners that we've seen, maybe sans the NBA, in the fact that we have commissioners and front offices from the league itself that don't follow past precedents as a guideline to how they should punish. And so we don't know what the NFL is going to do, but we do know that the NFL feels like this has been a massive, massive negative on the entire league all season long. From the standpoint of every national media member, from the standpoint of every time the Houston Texans came out of someone that's covering the NFL's mouth, it was immediately to Deshaun Watson, 22 cases, this, that, and the other thing, and it was nothing positive for the league, its owners, its teams, or anything to do with the Houston Texans. And that's going to sit there and be something the NFL considers deeply when they decide to levy the punishment. Because what Zeke did, whether he did it or not, that warranted the 6 games, or they thought warranted the 6 games, only affected a blip on the radar for a small segment of the population that follows the Dallas Cowboys. This Deshaun Watson thing is a league-wide thing that has brought negativity all season long, and maybe further than that when you think about when it started. So they're going to take that into consideration when they punish him.
And as I always tell people, Lisa Friel, who is the NFL special counsel, she made her bones in the Manhattan DA's sex crimes office. This is where she made her name. She likes making her name over and over again. Her eyes are big on this, and I do not expect them to go, oh, well, we're going to treat this as if there was only one woman involved, not 24. And that's why I think any team that trades for Deshaun has to be taking into consideration 6 games means you hit the lottery. You got lucky.
No doubt. No, absolutely no doubt. But let's also take into consideration everything that you said and the fact that as a female representing the National Football League with quote-unquote cases that are involving victims that were female, that's going to factor in. I don't. That's something that's taboo. People don't want to talk about. But I truly believe that's going to factor in as well with her making the decision.
And there's all of that. Then there's, you know, well, what about the other two stars? If you want to call them stars on the Texans? Has the last 3 weeks gotten you on the bandwagon of all these guys need to go?
Oh, we've talked about it. I've talked about it ad nauseum to where I've said if you can find value in anyone on this roster, you need to find discussions in which you can consider them moving on and you moving them to get something back. The fact is, though, that the offensive line performing the way it performed yesterday and Tunsil biding his own sweet time and just milking the hell out of an injury this year because he knows the team's not going anywhere and he really doesn't want to put anything on the line or put it on the field, and the fact that the Texans are deeply concerned about the fact that they will be criticized if they don't get back a haul similar to what they gave up to get him.
Which they're never going to get.
And they're not. But that they should be moving him just for a bowl of soup if it meant to get out from under him and start to really, truly progress and develop because of the fact that they don't have any talent on their roster. And by the time they get a quarterback worth protecting, he's going to be over the hill.
There's a couple of sides to that. And I think we'll get into that. You know, Watson, Tunsil, and Brandon Cooks, all of them, next.
Well, hello.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Disappointed by your HR and payroll technology? Maybe you need to outsource your administration. Go to HRP.net to learn more.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.